That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of The Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to The Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Hey guys, we're really excited to announce that our live show in Boston with True Crime Obsessed is back on for July 31st, 2021. It was originally scheduled for March of 2020, and that didn't happen. So here we are.
Right. We all know how it went down when we were all together in Brooklyn, New York, way back in October of 2019. And then the world stopped. We were not able to get together with our friends at True Crime Obsessed, Jillian and Patrick. Also, Maggie Freeling will be joining us. We got the band back together at the Wilbur Theater. You can go to thewilbur.com for your tickets. And if you had purchased tickets to the previous shows, current ticket holders, because of the venue change, your tickets will be refunded, and then you'll have exclusive advanced access to purchase tickets to the new show. You should have received two emails, one confirming the refund and one with the link to purchase the new tickets.
And of course, True Crime Obsessed covers true crime documentaries. And in this show, they cover the disappearance of Maura Murray, Oxygen documentary that Lance and I were a part of. See you at the Wilbur. On February 9th of 2004, 21-year-old UMass Amherst student Maura Murray disappeared in the White Mountains of New Hampshire in one of the most perplexing mysteries of our time.
For years, we have covered Maura's case and the tireless online community that surrounds it in great detail. We have since expanded our mission with this series, raising awareness and shining a light on the stories of other missing persons.
We now sit on the board of directors of the nonprofit organization Private Investigations for the Missing, which was founded by Bruce Maitland. Bruce's daughter, Brianna Maitland, went missing from Montgomery, Vermont on March 19th of 2004, just 6 weeks after and about 80 miles away from where Maura Murray vanished.
Private Investigations for the Missing aims to assist with investigations for underserved families whose missing loved ones have been forgotten by the media or by law enforcement. Through our growing community, we hope to shed a light on these cold cases.
Families and loved ones can reach out to us at investigationsforthemissing.org. This is Missing. Welcome back to Missing. I am Tim, here today with Lance. Lance, how are you today?
I am doing just wonderful, Tim. How are you today?
I am doing well as well. And Lance, this is part two of a two-parter that we recorded live on Thursday, July 1st. It was a Get Vocal night that we did with Heather Hanna, who is Jared Hanna's sister.
Correct. And the reason why we did that on July 1st was because the following day would mark the 10-year anniversary of Jared Hanna, her brother's disappearance from Centralia, Illinois, where he was last seen. His white 1990 GMC Sierra truck was found abandoned on Jolliffe Bridge Road, and he was 28 at the time, and we go into some detail about him, the disappearance, and sort of where she's at now and where the case is at.
And if you have any information, please contact the Clinton County Sheriff's Department at 618-594-4555. And make sure to jump into the Help Find Jared Hanna Facebook group. And that is run by Heather, and there's a link in the show notes. And make sure to listen to part one, because we kind of jump right into it in the beginning here of part two.
And if you're interested in checking out any of our other shows, swing on over to crawlspace-media.com. And Jason, you said something a few minutes ago about not remembering every detail of it. I think it's almost a benefit when you hear the stories like this, like not knowing all the details, because you get these like gut instinct reactions sometimes. For example, I had never even considered anyone siphoning gas out of a vehicle until Heather said that, you know, and not knowing the detail of that just makes it more impactful. Also with the guitar, it just stands out now. And there's something about reading it and even hearing it on a podcast maybe, but mostly reading details where you just absorb them the way you would absorb, like, I don't know, like if you took Spanish in high school or something. You just kind of memorize and you absorb, and it doesn't really mean anything because you're just trying to pass the test. I think like hearing it for the first time from someone like Heather is important, you know? So it just like made that, when you said that, I was like, you know what, that all of these details are so like, they just seem so important listening to them from someone so close.
For me, you know, the beginning was just a big blur, trying to remember everything and everybody coming. What can I do? What can anything that there is?
What about the rest of his car? Was there anything else found in his car that is considered suspicious or odd to you?
Well, in his duffel bag that he had, he carried a box of envelopes in there because he used it when he traveled, and he didn't clean it out. Those envelopes were strewn all over the truck, everywhere. The truck actually belonged to my mom and stepdad, and he was fire chief, and he had one of his badges up on the visor, and it took us a long time to find it. We finally found it underneath the seat. It looked like the truck had been ransacked.
I'm no detective, but after hearing all this, I mean, it's speculatory, of course, but if he did come across somebody, I would say robbery is looking like a real possibility here. Guitar, amp missing, truck siphoned to gas, looks like it's been ransacked. Somebody's doing something. I mean, that's speculation, but if I had to speculate on anything, that'd be the direction I'd go.
I kind of roughly figured that he had around $200 to $300 on him, and that's never been found. It wasn't in the duffel bag at all.
When he went to the gas station and bought a soda, do you know if he used cash or card?
Cash.
So he did. He had to have had some kind of cash on him, right?
He only had cash on him. He didn't. He had one of those Netspend cards, which is how he got his paycheck from when he traveled for work, because it was the best way. You know, that is the hardest thing to explain, because I really don't know. He worked for Orison Bush, and he went into sewer plants and treatment plants, and I don't know what they spread onto fields. I don't know.
Now, if I recall correctly, where they found that backpack, they were pretty well determined that that didn't just end up there, right? Somebody had to have gone and placed it in there that somewhat knew what they were doing.
There's been speculation that, oh, it floated down. Well, how could it float down when the clothes were folded and sitting on top of the duffel bag? And then there's been speculation that, oh, he walked back there and there's like a little ledge or something in the creek there, and then it gets real deep, and that he walked and he went swimming and he didn't realize there was a drop off and he drowned. I mean, they've come up with all kinds of different things. My brother knew how to swim. He swam in the river. So I don't see him going into water like that and not feeling with your foot to feel that there was a ledge there.
Was the bag, did it have like mud and sediment in it, or do you know?
I know everything was wet and some of the stuff was covered in mud, but it could have been mud that was, if it rained, it splashed up, you know?
Yeah, I don't want to speculate too much.
I mean, you come up with all kinds of different scenarios for that.
Yeah, well, it's just like a lot of these cases, you can come up with a thousand different things. And
uh-huh.
You just don't, you can come up with even maybe a most likely scenario, but even then you don't know for sure.
No, and we don't know. We have no clue of anything that happened with him. We know the bait was gone, so we know for sure he went fishing. We know for sure that he went and looked at a couple of cars, or he called about a couple of cars and went and looked at some of them. But other than that, we don't know what he did. And the last phone calls on his phone were 9:30 on the 2nd, and they were to the kids' mother. And all we got out of her was that she could hear fireworks. His phone charger was there, so there's no reason why his phone should have even been dead.
What was the search like once the report was filed? The
report was filed. Clinton County. Well, moms kept saying the Clinton County wouldn't tow it, wouldn't process the truck at all. And so Jersey County 3 days later took it and did the fingerprints on it. We do know that there was a set of fingerprints. What they've done with that, we don't know. But we were finally told that there were a set of fingerprints found on the truck that were not Jared's. We organized the very first search. I had an airplane up in the sky looking for any kind of disturbances in the ground from above, and we had people on horseback and ATVs and people walking and doing grid searches all the way down, and we've come up with nothing.
These fingerprints that were found on the truck, do you know where on the truck they were found?
No, that I don't know.
You had an airplane that was flying, and were they recording did they have a camera that was recording the ground?
No, unfortunately, no. It was somebody that just volunteered to take their plane up and look to see if they could see anything from up above for us. But the area is so thick with brush and wooded, it was hard to see on the ground, let alone up in the sky.
I know what that's like.
All the property owners, were they cooperative?
All but one. And they're still not cooperative with anything.
Why?
Who are they? They do not let you on their land at all.
Are they in the mob? Who are they?
I don't know who they are. I have never met them.
Is it a lot of land?
Quite a bit. South of where the truck was found.
Have you ever had a private investigator on this?
I have not. No.
And it looks like Bruce Maitland is in the chat. The Bruce Maitland.
Where's Craig over at when we need him?
Right.
He asked, is the truck still available for DNA?
I have the truck, actually.
Oh. I remember that. You do still have the truck, don't you?
I have the truck. The truck doesn't run, but I have the truck. We're still trying to decide what to do with it.
Okay, good.
I think we have some ideas of what to do with the truck.
Tim and Lance have some connections in that area, don't you?
I think a lot of people in this chat and on this screen have some connections to what can be done with that. So the truck's yours?
Yes, the truck is mine.
So you can do whatever you want with it?
Yes.
The truck goes from the scene where it was found to your mom and dad?
To my mom and stepdad, yeah.
Your mom and stepdad, did they drive it?
They drove it home. And then over the years, yeah, they used it. When you can keep it running. That was the part of the problem.
It looks like his cell phone also pinged off of the tower in Centralia.
Yes, last cell phone tower pings were the tower in Centralia.
Didn't he go have a beer the night of the 2nd somewhere?
I'm told he was in Alton, which is still like 20 minutes from me, about 13, 14 miles. That he was seen in two of the bars down there, which I know he frequented when he did go out. but we never saw him on camera. And I don't know if when we looked at the camera, we just missed it or he wasn't in there. But the bartender is the mother of his best friend, and she swears she talked to him that night.
If I recall correctly, he just had one beer, right? He wasn't.
Yeah, one beer, and then she said she had to go help somebody. And when she turned back around, he was gone.
Yeah, I don't think there was any indication that he was intoxicated or anything like that.
No, she said he wasn't.
What day of the week was it?
July the 2nd was on a Saturday.
All right, so yeah, he pops in a bar on a Saturday.
Yeah, I had to stop and think. That's been 10 years.
Yeah, sorry. I'm impressed you got that.
Sure, let me get my calendar out.
Yeah, everybody grab their phones.
No, I was just thinking about like the bartender at the bar, you know, whether it was like a slow night or a busy night. So I imagine it was probably kind of a busy night being a Saturday.
Fairly busy and holiday weekend.
Yeah.
But she didn't work on Friday night, so she said it had to be Saturday night. Because we even questioned, are you sure it wasn't Friday night, you know? Because we know he was all Friday night for sure. But she said no. She said, I didn't work Friday night. It was Saturday night.
Yeah, then it was. I mean, I love it when that happens because the first thought is like, well, the bartender probably got confused because they deal with so many people. But there was only two options here. It was Friday or Saturday. And if she didn't work Friday, it had to be Saturday.
And what about his coworkers who suggested those fishing spots? Have those guys been spoken to or have you spoken with them?
I only spoke to his boss because he's the one who told me, because we had contacted him to see if he had talked to Jared because he talked to him quite a bit. And he said, you know what, let me get a hold of Central City down there. It's right by Carlisle where they worked out of. And he says, let me ask them if they know of any places they told him when we were down there working for a few days. And so he contacted them. They all went and searched. Whether or not anybody ever talked to them, I don't know. I did not personally talk to them that I'm aware of anyway. Like I said, those first few weeks were quite hectic trying to get everything settled and figured out.
Can we talk a little bit about the phone call? True Crime PI had a good point in the chat. If he made the phone call to his ex and she heard the fireworks, where were the fireworks that night? Were these like major fireworks or were they, you know, kind of local residential fireworks? And
that I don't know. I'm going to guess that Alton probably had fireworks. They used to do them two nights in a row and they never do them on the fourth. So back then they probably were doing fireworks on the second and the third would be my guess. And then, but I think if I remember correctly, Centralia had fireworks also.
And that was around 9:30 at night.
St. Louis also had fireworks too. So yeah, about 9:30, that would be anybody setting off fireworks probably at that time.
Was that it? Was that all she heard? Was he trying to say something, but she couldn't hear him because of the fireworks?
She said all she heard in the background was fireworks. That's all we've gotten out of her.
All she heard in the background was fireworks.
Yeah.
How long did the call last?
Couple of minutes, not very long.
In a small town in Colorado, people turn to a family-run funeral home in their deepest moments of loss. Run by a mother and daughter team, the funeral home offered thoughtful services at a fair price. But there was a dark side to their business.
It was truly a house of horrors.
He said she may have dismembered him and sold parts of him.
I'm getting angry all over, a small sweat breaking out.
I'm investigative reporter Ashley Fonts, and this is the story of an unbelievable crime you've never heard of. A story of a funeral home that lured their victims in the front door only to sell their bodies out the back. From Campside Media and Sony Music Entertainment, listen to Cover Up, Body Brokers. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts to binge all episodes or listen weekly wherever you get your podcasts.
Step into the hidden corridors of the past with Hometown History, where every episode uncovers the untold stories and secrets nestled in the streets and alleys of our own backyards. We bring history to life, revealing the extraordinary in the ordinary, from local legends to forgotten tales that shape the communities we know today. Tune in to Hometown History and embark on a journey through time, right from where you are. Gather round, friend, and join me by the fire. I have a secret to share. When I was a child, I lived with my grandma. She allowed me to watch Unsolved Mysteries. Fast forward to 2008, my freshman year of college. A series of armed robberies on campus escalated into a serial rapist's reign of terror. That's when I created my first crime podcast. In January 2014, I picked up the podcast again from my college roommate who fell for an underage girl online, to the chilling story of a murdered nun in 1969 Baltimore, and in the throwaway series, I share my own journey of overcoming homelessness and how that experience led me to unmask a serial killer and identify three of his Jane Doe victims. This is Foul Play Crime Series, where the stories are real and the truth is waiting to be discovered.
Rex Sherman is a demon that walks among us, a predator that ruined families.
The LISK, Long Island Serial Killer podcast, was shocked when the news broke of Rex Huerman's arrest. After more than a decade of searching, law enforcement officials had finally pieced together enough evidence to bring formal charges against Rex Huerman. Initially charged with three murders, Huerman is now officially charged with all four deaths in the Gilgo 4 case. I'm your host, Chris Moss, and the LISK podcast will be releasing new episodes with interviews and fresh insight on the case as Rex Huerman awaits trial in Long Island. While we are relieved by the arrest, the LISK podcast team will be working hard to share new developments and perspectives as we get them. So please keep your eyes and ears out for new episodes, and if you haven't already, please listen to seasons 1 and 2 of LISK, Long Island Serial Killer, wherever you listen to podcasts.
And if you, I'm sorry for asking this because it's probably, you probably don't know. What kind of phone did he have?
Oh, good grief.
Sorry.
No, sorry. Don't remember that one.
Okay.
I didn't know if it was a phone that had like a passcode to open, or was it a...
No, like... I can tell you it was a flip phone.
It was a flip phone?
Yes. Back then it was flip phones. They were just starting to come out with the smartphones.
Okay, so he has a flip phone, which I don't know if that has a passcode to open, but...
I think so.
Hypothetically speaking, someone could pick up that phone, flip it open, and call probably one of the first couple of... contacts that or previous calls.
Yeah.
The cell phone was found in the duffel bag though, wasn't it?
And it was, yeah, it was found in the duffel bag with the SIM cards missing out of it.
Interesting.
Because that's when you had to have the SIM card put in them.
Right.
He broke phones like you wouldn't believe. So I couldn't even begin to tell you what brand we had had the last time.
Heather, do you still have that phone or do you have it or do you know where it is?
Clinton County has it in the evidence locker.
And the SIM card was missing out of the digital camera as well?
Yes, his little camera that he carried around had a memory card in it.
If someone's robbing him, why are they not taking the camera?
I don't know.
Why are they taking a SIM card out of his phone and the camera and not taking the devices that they could actually make money off of?
I don't know. And he took that camera everywhere he went. So it makes you wonder, did he see something... on the can, or did he record something he wasn't supposed to?
Was it a video camera or a still camera?
A video. It was actually both.
Cool.
And but you said
he
had
a video camera in it quite a bit.
And you said he had it with him all the time?
Oh, yes. Everywhere he went, he always had that thing on.
He was just filming everything?
Uh-huh.
Did he have a laptop or a computer?
Yes, he did. And I had actually found it at a pawn shop. And
what?
Paid the money to get it back. So I have it.
How did it get to the pawn shop?
He took it.
Oh, so he pawned it.
He pawned it, was paying to get it back. When he did it, I don't know.
If he was filming everything with his camera, where was he offloading that footage?
Some of it was on his computer.
What was the footage of? Just random stuff?
Just random stuff. The kids, places. Kids were using it.
If he shoots with that camera all the time, if he films with that camera all the time, then he's always making sure that he's got a fresh SIM card in it. He's always making sure that he's able to do it. The fact that they're missing from his phone and his camera, like if something happened to him, right, why is somebody taking that?
That somebody didn't want anybody to find.
Yeah, you don't.
That would be the only reason they'd be missing. Because if he just went swimming, why would he take the memory card and why would he take the Sims card?
Heather, what about the possibility of leaving on his own? Have you considered that? Has that been discussed with authorities?
We've discussed it, but when he traveled for work, he was too worried about still having the kids taken care of. I mean, he called them every single day that he was gone. He always made sure I had money to take care of them for diapers and stuff because Caden had been in diapers. So I can't see him just up and walking away from them. That theory, I keep that in the back of my mind, but that theory just don't make sense. Well, and that's one of the things Clinton County said. Oh, he's 28. He just took off. So they didn't want to do anything because, oh, he's a man. He's 28. He just took off. No, that's out of character.
I'm sorry. Like, never in my life have I ever, as bad as things get, like, I've never been like, I'm done. I'm taking off. I get how people could do that, but it just blows my mind that outsiders whose job it is to look into these disappearances can say, hey, they can just run away if they want. Like, come on. Like, people, like, I know that people do that, but that's not, that shouldn't be your default. Like, hey, it happens all the time.
Usually when people do that, though, they've there's given some indication they want to do that.
Yeah, there's like a buildup to it.
Yeah, and when you have somebody like Jared who, it's out of character for him not to go get his kids or say, hey, would you pick him up? I'm going to be late or something like that. It's all out of character for him. And it doesn't seem like law enforcement wants to listen to that. When you said, hey, this ain't normal.
I mean, just the cards missing from the camera alone should be something.
Yeah, we didn't discover that till 4 months later, but that should have been a red flag right there that this wasn't ordinary.
Was the camera and cell phone fingerprinted?
Everything was so wet that they said they couldn't get fingerprints off of anything. There was a shirt in the bag that did not belong to him.
What?
Yes.
Well, how do you know it didn't belong to him?
Well, right after it was found, we went down for that search. I got to see everything laying out, and I kept saying that shirt isn't his. Well, Mom kept going behind me saying it was. Well, when we went down a couple of years ago, and I finally got to see the bag stuff again, because I've been asking constantly to see it. No one, oh, sorry, nobody's here to get it out. That's what I got every single time we went down there. And they finally got it out, and I said, that shirt is not his. I want to say it had like a pub crawl or a poker run, something like that on it. It wasn't a shirt that he ever had at the house. And I saw his laundry all the time, so.
Is that shirt in evidence as well?
Yes, all that is still in evidence. His shorts, the other shirt he had on. Because there was two shirts in the bag, the one he didn't have and the one he'd had on.
Mr. Maitland asks, have you ever had a computer expert take a look at the computer for any computer forensics on that?
No, Clayton County didn't want it. I'm the one that went and picked it up from the pawn shop and everything, and I've been through it.
Do you still have it?
I still have it. I still have his clothes that he had on the day before here, too, in a bag.
It would be interesting. Tiff even has a point that kind of goes with Mr. Maitland's point about could he have had a separate email account where he sent photos? She says she had one for her son where she sends all the photos that she wants to I want to save for him. So that kind of goes in with the computer forensics. You can send that hard drive. They can recover things, deleted files, and there's, you know, the hard drive contains more than just what's visible to you if you turn the computer on.
Yeah, because I'm not very tech savvy when it comes to things.
I'm friends with a private investigator that specializes in data recovery.
Oh, good. Okay. Yeah, there could be a lot on there that now tell me again about the pawn shop thing. So Jared himself brought the computer down there for money, and then he was paying it back. Is that it?
Yeah.
Paying back to get the computer back at some point.
Took a loan out on it.
Right. Okay. Okay. So no one else had that computer that wasn't available for someone else to get. Okay.
And he even had password put on there, which I was afraid to even try it. So one of my IT guys that I worked with said, hey, I got a program I can run to see what the password is. So he run that to make sure that was it before I put it in. Because with how Jared was, you never know if he booby trapped something and I'd lose everything on it.
Heather, there was a question here in the chat room that I didn't want to get lost. It was asked by a lady, Susie actually asked, how can we help with the case? What do you want the community really kind of as a whole to what do you recommend that they do to continue to help you out?
Just keep spreading the word. Hopefully one of these days someone will come forward with something.
And good time to give that number. Clinton County Sheriff's Department is 618-594-4555. Jared Hanna was described as 5'7 and weighing about 195 with black hair and brown eyes. Is that all accurate?
Yes.
And where can people go to get information if they want to help?
On Facebook, I have a Help Find Jared Hanna page. I actually created an email account. It's helpfindjaredhanna@yahoo.com, all lowercase. I know I did some things when I come back from CrimeCon. Learned a few things while I was there.
When a person goes missing, their loved ones often find themselves overcome with worry and grief. Bruce Maitland started the 501c3 nonprofit organization Private Investigations for the Missing because he knows this feeling all too well.
When Bruce's daughter Brianna disappeared in March 2004, he was surrounded by licensed private investigators dedicated to finding her. Now his mission is to provide dedicated private investigators at no cost to other families of the missing, desperate for answers but without the financial means.
Private Investigations for the Missing needs your help. To read the mission statement, make a donation, and keep up with our blog, visit us at investigationsforthemissing.org and follow us at PI for the Missing on Twitter and Facebook and Investigations for the Missing on Instagram.
Because forever is too long to wait.